Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, January 5. Hello, for the first time in 2018, Orion Samuelson with you, and look at what turned out to be quite a start to the year and quite a start for the week, as the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ hit their best weekly gains in more than a year. Technology stocks helped lift major indices to records. And with the New Year Day's holiday falling on a Monday this year, it was the strongest first four trading days to a year in more than a decade for all three major indices. For the Dow, it was the strongest start since 2003. For the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, it was the strongest since 2006. And talk about records, the Dow moving up above 25,000 and the S&P 500 crossing the 2,700 mark. A U.S. tax overhaul last month that includes hefty corporate tax cuts helped to fuel the late-year gains and was the first major legislative victory in President Trump's pro-growth agenda since he took office a year ago. The Dow broke above 25,000 for the first time on Thursday. The S&P closed above 2,700 on Wednesday, and the NASDAQ settled above 7,000 earlier in the week. One analyst said, and I quote, "We are up over 2% for the first 4 days of 2018, so that's pretty good. Markets are still working to figure out the implications of tax cuts, and that's provided some of the lift along with already good economic forecast." Weaker than expected December jobs data out today also could help the Federal Reserve stick to its policy of gradual interest rate hikes in 2018, which would be good for stocks. Job growth slowed more than expected in December amid a decline in retail employment, but a pickup in monthly wages pointed to labor market strength. Non-farm payrolls increased by 148,000 jobs last month, and analysts and economists had expected an increase of 190,000 in that report. The year's strong start follows a surprisingly sharp rally in 2017 that ended with the S&P 500 up 19.4% on the year. And then as we take a look at the weekly numbers starting in 2018, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 221 points for the day, 25,297. The S&P 500 closed up 19 points at 2743, and the NASDAQ up 57 points, and it ended the week at 71.35. And for the week, the Dow went up 2.33%, S&P 500 gained 2.6%, and the NASDAQ climbed 3.4%. But there's no question the Dow got a lot of the attention along with the S&P 500 this week. And the Dow was talked about a great deal. As a matter of fact, I want to share with you some knowledge that I certainly didn't remember. But the Associated Press put together some of the highlights of the Dow Industrial Average. Let me share that with you and test your knowledge of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. First of all, when was the Dow Jones Industrial Average first published? Well, it was first published May 26 of 1896. What is the lowest recorded closing level for the Dow? The lowest point on record, 28.48. That happened on August 8th of 1896. Has the Dow always had 30 stocks in it? No. The first version of the average contained 12 industrial stocks, including names that have sort of disappeared: U.S. rubber, American sugar, and American cotton oil. What is the Dow Jones Industrial Average named for? Well, the average was created by Dow Jones and Company, which was founded by Charles Dow, Edward Jones, and Charles Bergstresser. Dow Jones and Company also founded the Wall Street Journal, but I guess they dropped the long name, otherwise it could have been the Dow Jones Bergstresser gauge that we were watching all these years. This one kind of surprised me. Which company has been in the Dow Industrial Average from the very beginning, going back to 1896? The answer? General Electric. And then, what was the Dow's biggest one-day increase in percentage terms, and when did it happen? The Dow went up 11.1%, 936 points on October 13th of 2008, after a European plan was announced to bail out financial institutions. The next question: what was the Dow's biggest one-day decline in percentage terms, and when did it happen? The Dow lost 22.6%, or 508 points, on October 19th of 1987, and that has been known ever since as Black Monday. Then, on the lighter side, the final question: which Broadway musical contains Dow Jones in its title, and when did it open? The Tony Award-nominated musical comedy How Now, Dow Jones, opened on Broadway in 1967, and the story follows Kate, who is frustrated because her fiancé will only marry her once the Dow crosses 1,000 points. Well, that didn't happen until 1972. So let's take a look at some of the reports that have come out this week, and today was a pretty active day. Job growth slowed more than expected in December, and that came because of a decline in retail employment, but a pickup in monthly wage gains pointed to labor market strength that could pave the way for the Federal Reserve to increase interest rates in March. Non-farm payrolls up by 148,000 jobs last month after climbing 252,000 in November. And retail payrolls decreased by 20,300 in December. That's the largest drop since March, despite reports of a strong holiday shopping season. The unemployment rate was unchanged at a 17-year low of 4.1%, and that was in the report. Some of the other reports that have impacted the market this week: new orders for U.S.-made goods increased in November for a fourth straight month, but business spending on equipment appeared to be cooling after robust growth in 2017. According to the Commerce Department report today, factory goods orders jumped 1.3%. That coming amid rising demand for transportation and electrical equipment. Orders for non-defense capital goods, excluding aircraft, which are seen as a measure of business spending plans, fell 0.2% in November, and instead of slipping 0.1% as reported last month. The other reports that impacted the market today, construction spending during the month of November rose to a record high, more than expected, and driven by a surge in investment in private residential and non-residential projects. That says to me that construction spending taking place in the housing industry in looking at future demand. Construction spending rose 0.8% to an all-time high of $1.257 trillion. October's construction outlays were revised downward to show a 0.9% gain instead of the previously reported 1.4% gain. So, a lot going on in this first week of the new year, and unless you are short the market, all of the news would be good news for you. Oh, and one more, factory orders for U.S.-made goods increased in November for a fourth straight month. Factory goods orders jumped 1.3% amid rising demand for transportation and electrical equipment, according to the Commerce Department. Well, we'll talk agricultural markets when we come back. Our guest will be Paul Georgie, who is the chairman of the board of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois. You've heard him many times over the years talk markets with us, and he will do that when we continue on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Paul Georgie, chairman of the board at Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, back with us here on this Saturday morning in some very cold weather. How much of a difference does that make in consumption of pork and beef and grain and everything else we grow on farms here in the United States? Do you look at that weather every day?
Well, we watch weather every day. I think the consumption is probably a normal event. We have cold weather sometime throughout the year. I think with the number of livestock that we have, I mean, we certainly are seeing probably a larger consumption of corn simply because of the cold weather. However, I don't think it has a major impact, when, especially when we have 2.4, almost 2.5 billion bushels of corn that we've got to that we'll have for in our ending stocks and our bins here at the end of this year.
I know this is a tough question, but as we look back over 2017, was there one surprise in the market that really caught traders off guard?
Well, I think the surprise that caught traders, farmers, everybody off guard is that we really never got much of a rally in the corn market. And we had dry conditions, really adverse conditions in many areas in western Iowa, southern Illinois, that were, they were too wet and then they were too dry. And when the combines rolled through the fields, there were some exciting and unbelievable yields that were being harvested. And I think that, to me, was the surprise, and probably the weight that is that we're burdened with right now, is that we've had such a big crop that was totally a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I heard from farmers all over the Corn Belt saying, you know, the yield is a lot better than I expected, but I think probably technology is the culprit on that one, because we can overcome dry weather, we can overcome a lot of challenges because of the technology that we're now looking at in our various crops.
Yeah, and the technology and the genetics. I mean, that's the genetics that we're dealing with today, and the corn growers, corn seed corn producers, and soybean producers have done just a tremendous job and made tremendous strides in that part of the production agriculture. Soybeans probably gets the biggest hurrah here because of the amount of yield that we've been able to produce this last year. And you got to say that has to do with the seed genetics and from what talking to seed producers, they still believe there's another 10 to 20 bushel an acre soybeans that we can get out of these things simply with the better genetics. And of course, if you get the right amount of rain, it gives us a tremendous potential.
Well, talking soybeans, we have to talk South America this time of the year. And I'm sitting here looking at a story that moved across Reuters yesterday. Brazil's Mato Grosso kicks off soy harvesting with producers making a good start. And Brazil and South America continues to grow as a competitor for the U.S. market, right?
Well, they do that. And that's something that we've got to look at and be concerned about. We have a USDA report next week on the 12th of next Friday, and one of the key numbers there that we are concerned about is export demand. Right now, U.S. export demand is running about, if you compare it to a year ago, we're about 270 million bushels behind a year ago levels, or the amount that we need to meet the USDA goal. We're probably not going to stay that far behind, but let's say we take 100 million bushel of that off, and you add that to the carryover that we had last month of 445 million bushel, that gives us an ending stocks of about 545 million bushel. And the problem that we have is that because of South America starting to harvest, once they normally when they start harvesting, that takes away from our markets, and so it's going to be hard for us to catch up. So by them starting to harvest, our stocks and our exports running behind, it doesn't make a lot of exciting opportunities for soybeans here in the near term, unless the USDA surprises us and say, well, we didn't have as many a big of yield in soybeans or whatever here in the U.S. So we're going to need some help because South America is knocking on our door as with another crop, and they do that, they ship it out, and that's usually not good for U.S. bean prices.
And as I take a look at that South American crop, do they start moving into the world market as soon as they start harvesting?
Well, yes. I mean, a lot of times they'll market. They don't have a lot of storage down there, and they've actually still have got soybeans on the ground from last year that they haven't moved, or in storage from last year that they haven't moved. So that gives them an opportunity to market this grain. Their grain is cheaper. When our dollar goes up, that makes their soybeans cheaper, and you're going to see the export buyers go to the South American market rather than to the U.S. market.
Now, is it just me, or are the Chinese buying less from us? Because it seems like every day we get a report of export sales to China. How big a factor are they compared to a year ago or 2 years ago?
Well, I don't have the exact numbers of how much China is behind a year ago. China's market continues to grow. Their demand continues to grow. But they've been buying a tremendous amount of soybeans out of South America the last several months instead of from the U.S. Markets. Now, the Pacific Northwest ports are still advantageous to China, and it's relatively cheap, so they can get soybeans loaded out of there in a very timely manner. But I think part of that challenge that we have with China right now, even though they're a big user of soybeans, is the trade agreements that we're dealing with between the countries, and they've been buying soybeans out of South America at a very fast pace compared to what they have been out of the U.S.
If NAFTA does go away, how much of a challenge will that be for American producers?
Well, I think it's going to be a challenge. How much, we don't know. I mean, I think we're seeing right now some, like Mexico is a big buyer of U.S. corn. I think, and they have made some larger purchases than they have in the past. I think some of that is kind of front running the potential problem of the NAFTA agreement. It does have an impact, and maybe not as much of an impact on agriculture as some of the other sectors like the automobile industry and so forth. But it will have an impact on agriculture. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
And then let me get back to corn for a moment and talk about ethanol. You know, when we started with gasohol back in the 70s, who would have thought it would grow to the industry it has? And I guess the thing that surprises me more than anything is it has become a big export market for U.S. producers. Is ethanol going to continue to be a part of the corn market and soy diesel part of the soybean market?
I would say yes, I believe it will. I think, and the other part of it is it needs to, because if we would anyway lose that ethanol demand on the corn side of the equation, it would definitely be a detriment to price, because we use a tremendous amount of corn for ethanol production. About a fifth or about a third of the crop actually goes to ethanol production. If we would lose that, that would be significant. But I think that will continue. The world wants to have more ethanol. South America needs more ethanol. Europe as well. And we will become more of an exporter of ethanol, I believe. And our ethanol industry continues to grow. They continue to become more efficient converters of corn to ethanol. So all of these things are positive. It's a industry that's going to continue as gas prices and our crude oil prices go higher. The big question there will be, how high does it go? Can we keep gasoline prices low enough that we can continue to mix and use enough gasoline and ethanol to keep the profitability at these ethanol plants?
Well, we can't thank you enough for your joining us throughout the year here on the Saturday Morning Show. And one more time, the website to get involved in your January 23, 24, 25 meeting.
It's Allendale-INC.com. That's Allendale-INC.com.
Well, thank you very much for being a part of it, and we'll call on you throughout the year as we always do. A visit with Paul Giorgi, Chairman of the Board of Allendale Incorporated in McHenry, Illinois.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
In the world of agriculture and agribusiness, the first week of the new year, we did get a couple of earnings reports showing that the farm economy weakness indeed is affecting agribusiness companies, affecting a lot of jobs, and certainly making some tough demands on executives at the agribusinesses. Cargill reported a 6% drop in quarterly profits this week, as a global oversupply of grains limited trading opportunities for the food commodities merchants. 4 years of bumper grain and oilseed harvests have squeezed profits for Cargill, along with its rivals, the ABCD Group. That would be Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge, Louis Dreyfus, and traders expect more of the same next year. Of Cargill's four business segments, its unit that buys, trades, and processes grains and oilseeds was the only one that saw quarterly earnings decline from a year ago. It was the eighth time in the past 14 quarters the unit posted a year-on-year decline, reflecting the pressure from massive inventories of grains, reducing price volatility, and clipped margins. A spokeswoman for ADM said very large U.S. corn and soybean crops added to the buildup in global stocks that has weighed on markets, diminishing price volatility and lessening trade opportunities. And the other large company in agribusiness that reported this week, Monsanto, reported weaker than expected quarterly earnings on Thursday and said low crop prices hurting farmers' incomes would limit the company's ability to profit from sales of its genetically engineered seeds and agricultural chemicals. The outlook makes the world's biggest seed company the latest agribusiness to detail the ongoing pressures from large crop inventories that are weighing on world markets. Monsanto, which is being acquired by Bayer, does not have, quote, great hope for significant price improvements for its U.S. corn seeds. That, according to Chief Executive Hugh Grant. U.S. farmers facing corn prices around $3.50 a bushel, down from more than $8 in 2012, making it harder for companies to sell higher-priced seeds, fertilizer, and equipment that can produce the bigger yields. Grant said it's a tough year, so everybody is fighting for the last acres. And in the fiscal first quarter ended November 30th, net profit attributable to Monsanto rose to $169 million, 38 cents a share, and that would be coming from $29 million or 7 cents a share a year earlier. So those are some of the challenges that move from farm fields all the way to city factories and agribusiness inputs. I do want to remind you that we are facing another shutdown, one-day close of the markets in observance of Martin Luther King Day on Monday, January 15. Markets will be open as normal on Friday, the 12th, but on Monday, January 15th, markets will be closed in the agricultural community as well as on Wall Street. And a lot of conventions are getting underway this month. The American Farm Bureau Convention underway in Nashville, Tennessee. And then at the end of the month, the American Sheep Industry Association and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association holding their annual meetings as well. So where will we start the trade on Monday? Well, in the grain market, March wheat will start at 4.30 and three quarters a bushel after dropping 3 cents on this Friday. March corn will start at 3.51 and a quarter after gaining a quarter of a cent a bushel today. And January soybeans gained a penny today, and on Monday they'll start at 9.61 and a half. And then the livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange. February lean hogs will start at $71.42. February live cattle will start at $119.25 after dropping $3 today. And January feeder cattle will start the week at $146.62 after dropping $2.57 a hundredweight today. Well, our time is gone once again. Thank you for being with us. And Max Armstrong and Orion Samuelson appreciate your listening throughout the year. To The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.